When you turn on your television set today, you're bombarded with all kinds of shows, sitcoms, reality shows, news, sports, political debates, and you probably see a lot of different kinds of people. Today, TV is culturally diverse, but it wasn't always so. African Americans didn't really have a strong television presence until, well, what's the first black TV show you remember? Well, we're moving on up, moving on to the good time. In a town you need a payment, good time. What made all those shows possible was a movement that started in the late 1960s. After the assassination of Martin Luther King, black people wanted a voice and were producing shows on public television to express their political views and concerns of the time. A new book, Black Power TV, by Devorah Heitner, chronicles the birth of these programs, what they were meant to do, and what they indeed turned out to be. Devorah joined me in studio, along with San Francisco-based author Jewel Gomez, who worked on the 1960s program Say Brother. Jewel Gomez, tell me about your beginnings with Say Brother.
When I arrived for the first day of work, and the director was black, the producer was black, other staff members were all African American, I realized there was something revolutionary happening, because you never saw black people on television unless they were doing reruns of Amos and Andy.
Did you feel that they were modeled after mainstream shows or quote-unquote white shows, or were you starting something new and fresh, and was that a challenge?
Everything was kind of new. Everything from trying to get studio technicians to understand what kind of coloring the light gel should be. Because if you're going to have darker skinned people, you don't want to use a lot of green. And what kind of backdrops people should have, because the clothes are going to be different. You know, in regularly in television, you're told, don't wear any patterns. Don't wear white, don't wear any patterns. But if you're going to have African-American artists and political people coming on TV, they're going to be wearing patterns. They're going to be wearing dashikis. They're going to be wearing all of the bright colors that people tend to stay away from.
And Stan Lathan also, who worked on both Say Brother and then Black Journal and Soul as well, he talked about the politics of using close-ups. And I quote him in the book, and he said that a white cinematographer said, well, people won't be able to look at black faces in close-up because they'll find it grotesque. And he started to shoot, he said, after that, as many close-ups of black faces as possible and inserted them into these shows. And so there was a real intentional aesthetic disruption.
But also in terms of format, one of the things that became really clear is that African Americans wanted to have a news show, but they also connected their news with their culture. They did not separate information about what was going on with Mandela in South Africa from listening to the stylistics sing. They really saw the poetry of Langston Hughes as significant to their everyday lives as knowing what was going on with the neighborhood housing programs.
So let's hear a clip from Say Brother. The program featured interviews on everything from politics to education, health, sports, and war. Here's boxer Muhammad Ali on the show in 1969.
Black people really don't have nothing to fight for. We go to Vietnam, we come back. I saw a brother coming to the airport with no arms and one leg cut off. Couldn't find nobody to push him to a taxi cab. And come back home and we fight for our own freedom. We get our heads beat up. And I just don't think I should go 10,000 miles from here and shoot some black people that never caught me, never lynched me, never put dogs on me, never raped my mama, enslaved me, and deprived me of freedom, justice, equality. And he's black, too. I just can't shoot him.
That's boxer Muhammad Ali on the program Say Brother from 1969, making a pretty strong anti-war statement. Jewel Gomez, how much of the content of
Black TV was, do you think, you know, politically focused?
I have to say one thing. Mm. I feel incredibly proud. I was the one who talked Muhammad Ali into coming on to our show. I dialed his hotel room and got him on the phone.
Oh, tell me about that.
That was such a shock. I called his hotel. He picked up the phone and tried to pretend he wasn't him. But he has such a distinguished voice. I mean, of course it was him. So I just went along with it and I described the show. I said, I can send you material. He said, okay, call me back. I hung up. In about an hour, I called him back. He said, what time? And he showed up at the studio. His people drove him to the studio. And I didn't believe he was going to actually show up. And there he was. I went flying from the studio when they called me from the front desk to say he was there. I flew down the hallway, slammed open the door, and hit him with the doorknob, which probably reached maybe to his belt buckle. He was so big. And I was so apologetic. You couldn't, I was like, what can you say? And he was like a doll. He was a doll. He was so thoughtful and kind and thrilled. And he wanted to meet everybody. And he wanted to meet the Black producers and staff. He was so thrilled. It was pretty amazing. And then he gave that great interview, you know, that was so perfect. Really giving us real reasons for African-Americans to be suspicious about war. And I think, in reality, everything we did was about politics. Because we were visible on the airwaves doing anything, it was going to be political. Whether we were, you know, interviewing any Black nationalist activist, we did a wonderful interview with the young musicians who survived the plane crash which killed Otis Redding. And they were still in post-traumatic stress. But they wanted to be able to talk about Otis because they understood how quickly he could be forgotten. And that was very political. And they were there. They came to talk because they did not want a great artist to disappear.
And our arts and music are a massive part of the African-American experience, and the Black TV shows reflected that. Here are the impressions playing on a live special edition of Say Brother from March 1969.
Everybody, woo, get on, move on up. Woo, 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 woo. We're a winner, baby. Come on, everyone, why not give us just a little bit of a soul clap? You know how to do that little soul clap? Just like that. All right. Now everybody say, hey.
So, and it wasn't just playing the music, but discussions of the history of the music, as we hear on this June 1969 episode of Say Brother, hosted by Jim Spruill.
There is great talent in the Black community. We know this because white people are constantly stealing everything we have and packaging it and calling it whiteness. Witness the Beatles, you know, witness Cream. This is all Black music. It's all Black music. If we had a package going in this country where all Black artists belong to Black organizations,
that's
the only way white people would get to see their Black people whom they love so much in music and in dance and in art is through us.
There were so few images of African Americans on television, and they were so limited. Julia and I Spy, you know, these shows that just denied American apartheid and pretended that it didn't exist. And so to see Roxbury and Bedford-Stuyvesant, to see communities that were never represented, for people to turn on the opening of Say Brother and see their neighborhood, see those images, that was very, very powerful.